You're tuned into Desperate, a podcast where two unwed women take a walk down Wisteria Lane to visit ABC's critically acclaimed show, Desperate Housewives. Retire your apron, kick off your heels, and sit back. Hit it, girls!
Okay, welcome to Desperate. I'm Julia.
And I'm Jordan.
And we are the hosts of this show, but you might already know that. We think at this point, if you're listening, you probably already know the gist, but I'll go through what we do here just in case you're popping in on episode whatever. We're almost at the end of season two, so welcome if you're just starting.
Yeah, it came up on us fast.
It came up so fast, yeah. But this is a podcast where us two unwed women take a walk down Wisteria Lane of ABC's critically acclaimed show Desperate Housewives to visit these ladies and learn what we can from them. And lessons we have learned, yes. We, like we said, are at the end of season two. Today we'll be recapping season two, episode 22, titled No One Is Alone. I don't know how true that is.
Yeah, we'll see how true this episode even proves that, but okay.
Before we do our full-blown recap, before we do that of this episode today, we are going to talk about where we've been this season because a lot has happened. And then we do our own Desperate Deeds to get you warmed up for what's coming our way. And after we do our recap of this episode, we evaluate it on a bunch of different scales. And then we just wrap it up. Mm-hmm. But I guess we could talk about where we've been. And the biggest thing to happen last episode was in Bree's life, she discovered that her son had slept with her boyfriend because her boyfriend is a sex addict. And this is only after her son, Andrew, tried to get his sister to hit on Bree's boyfriend to grind his axe. He has a big problem with Bree again all of a sudden because he couldn't be emancipated or something. I don't really know.
Now he's mad that he lost his trust fund, I guess. But he keeps bringing on this shit himself and then getting mad that there's consequences.
Yeah, this has been a long time coming. And we keep being like, Andrew, can't you let it go? Andrew, can't you chill? He's, I think at this point, been expelled from school or at least suspended at one point. He was suspended for smoking weed. Last season,
I know that he was like kicked off the swim team for that. I don't know if he's been expelled.
I don't know. I don't get the vibe he's going to school that often.
So is he 18 though? Because I feel like Bree can't just leave him on the fucking street.
She could. I mean, I don't know. Maybe.
What if she go to jail for that?
I think he's just about 18.
Is that child endangerment? Like, what's happening?
Technically, but he slept with her boyfriend.
Oh no. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying Bree's in the wrong. I just feel like if Andrew like wanted to get her back yet again, like could he go to a police station?
Well, I think she would just make up a story probably.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm not sure, but that's the biggest thing to happen. I mean, she's been dating Peter, the sex addict, and not drinking. And I mean, I would probably start drinking again after that incident.
Oh my God, yeah. I would become a full-blown alcoholic after that.
Hopefully not dating Peter anymore. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Andrew, there has been so much stuff with him. And she drops him off and she just says, like, I don't love you anymore, which rightly so, she shouldn't. And he's like, I knew that you wouldn't love me the moment I told you I was gay and I win. And she's like, no, I don't love you, not love you because you're gay. I'm sorry you thought that.
Yeah, she's like, that's not been the case. She's like, don't get me wrong. I handled you being gay wrong by sending you to a conversion camp. But
yeah,
but I never stopped loving you.
Yeah, so Andrew's got it twisted. He's now out on the street. Interesting. But that was the biggest shocker of episode 21.
Yeah, that was. What else? Everything paled in comparison. But so Susan last episode, she was exposed because Edie hired a private detective basically to find out who Carl was cheating on her with. And so Susan Mike basically finds the guy and warns Susan. So Susan's trying to figure out how to handle it, and she ends up writing a letter to Edie. And in this letter, she confesses to everything but also apologizes. Well, Mike ends up paying off the private investigator because he is still in love with her. That was also the other thing that was like, oh, here's a big thing.
I guess Mike is still in love with her.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, sure. But anyway, so she steals the letter back from the mailman, and in the chaos that ensues, which is him thinking she's trying to sleep with him, Julie sees the letter on the table and she puts it back in the mailbag.
Stupid. So stupid.
Yeah, the whole thing was just like, Jesus,
like,
Christ.
Why was she going through their mail? Like, I don't know. I would,
because she's the one that pays the bills, Julia. Not Julia.
I know. It's okay. Oh my gosh. But we also agreed last episode that that mailman wasn't in the wrong. Like, Susan was putting out vibes.
And then she still didn't tell him no. She was like, oh no, rape check? I'm like, no, what are you doing?
She was like, oh, I have to become a lesbian or something.
Yeah, she's like, I'm like, a lesbian on Tuesday. Like,
you could have just been like, I think you're getting the wrong vibe. That wasn't the vibe.
Like, there are a lot of ways out of that situation.
That mailman seems like he might have slept with several of his, like, they're not, I mean, his clients,
this seemed to be something he's done before, but
because he was like, a lot of people have this fantasy or something was
yeah, with like gross old mailmen. Yes, that's what we all have.
I've never even seen, I guess I have seen a mailman, like, we have a, I live in an apartment building though, so it's different.
Yeah,
I'm not like, hey, you're my mailman.
So after, by the end of the episode, Edie does read the letter, and Edie then drenches with a watering can, which I thought was a nice touch, Susan's house with gas, and burns that shit down.
Yeah,
so Susan kind of got her comeuppance on that one. Because she never really did have to do anything after she burned.
She never did anything.
She's never faced consequences for any decision she's ever made, except for that time that Mike dumped her and she went screaming in a dress. But
embarrassing.
But there's no real consequences because I guess Mike's still in love with her. So
yeah, out of nowhere, they went bowling once and he's like, I guess I still love her.
Yeah, he only loves her because Zach does not care about him. Because guess what? We have not seen Zach or Mike interact in like 20 episodes now.
For real. Actually, I completely forgot they were related.
Yeah, Mike was like, oh shit, I threw away my relationship for a kid that hates me. Oops.
Wow, he didn't come out on top anywhere.
Mm-mm.
Okay, wow, I'm just realizing.
Yeah, no, it occurred to me as I was forming that sentence. I was like, oh, this is something I should say.
Wait, yes, awesome. But another storyline, that went on last episode with Gabby and Carlos and having the baby. Since Lily got taken away by her stripper mom and her bouncer dad, they have no baby, and that's their main... I mean, can't they chill? I guess Carlos was very single-minded on the baby for a while. I'm just like, all right, after... Okay, they had the miscarriage, and he was, like, pressuring her hardcore to have a baby. I'm like... They could have chilled a bit, and then they lose this baby. I'm like, maybe you guys should chill a bit again and just collect yourselves. But they are not the type of people who collect themselves, it's seeming.
No.
So
I do get the vibe that they're like, they clearly have like marriage problems from the get, because the season opened with like him being in prison and her cheating and all that coming out, right?
Yeah.
So like, I do feel like this baby is just like what they think will fix their problems, because she was pregnant at the beginning of the season. So it's like, I do think the baby was like the one thing kind of keeping them together. Mm-hmm. And so maybe that's why like they're so desperate to like have this kid. But it's like, okay, maybe you should mourn the lost children, because you're clearly affected by this. Like,
yes, it's like the bandage on their marriage. But they find out that Yao Ming is wanted by ICE, the immigration enforcement, and they go to a lawyer. They try to save her. They are going to great lengths for this chick. And I don't know if it's because they just have an indentured servant at this point and it's working out for them. Never escaping slave labor there. And the lawyer tells them that she needs to either be married or like having a baby with somebody in the country. And they're like, well, that's perfect, because like, we need a surrogate. And like, Yao Ming curly, like, clearly doesn't understand what a surrogate is. They introduce this idea to her. They're like, you could be our surrogate. And she's like, what? And then they're like, we'll get you pregnant. And she's like, no, I'd rather go back to China than get pregnant. And we find out she's a virgin and she thinks that her body will be ruined after baby. And news flash, whether you're a virgin or not, it will be ruined after a baby. Your body will never be the same.
No, and it won't.
So Gabby tries to convince her that men don't want a virgin and they don't care. And then then she tries to sleep with Carlos on accident because she doesn't understand how surrogacy works. They go to a clinic and like the egg and shit gets implanted in you. And Yao Mei like gets naked in front of Carlos and like hops in bed. And Carlos doesn't really say no until Gabby comes up and is like, we got to go. And she's like, oh my God, what's happening? Then at the clinic, Carlos has to go come in a cup and he like thinks about Yao Mei being a virgin. So yeah. I guess
it was icky.
Yeah.
I felt icky by it.
It didn't leave any of us feeling inspired or anything. It just left us feeling concerned. And once again, not big fans of Carlos. He's up and down this season in our books.
It's like he'll be really great one episode and then turns around and like acts like a piece of shit the next. And it's very, very off-putting.
Yeah, it's not making me feel good that he has a crush on their servant. So.
No, fuck no.
Yeah, but I'll let you take it away with Lynette. She's last but not least.
Yeah, so Lynette's storyline, as we all know, Ed was trying to fire Tom because of the whole AIM gate. I don't know what else to call it.
AIM gate.
And so basically Lynette tells Tom, like, hey, by the way, like, Ed told his wife that you're the one sending these messages, so he's blaming you and she's demanding that he fires you. And so they decide that they're gonna, you know, do their best to fight this, and Tom's gonna like kick ass at work. So they go in and Ed is just like very dismissive of Tom and immediately kind of like shuts down his pitch and then announces to everybody that they're going to be hiring a forensic accountant to come in and go over all the expense receipts and reports. And he says, if I find anything, like, you're fired. And he's like, and we're going to start with Tom. So Tom gets like very sweaty about this and starts panicking. And he's like, maybe I should just quit. Like, he's just going to come after us. Like, he'll find something eventually with some sort of investigation. And Lynette's like, what do you mean? Like, I thought you were so gung-ho about this. Like, what's happening? And so she's like, well, I'm going to go talk to him. And Tom's like, no, I'll talk to him. I don't want to hide behind my wife's skirt. And so he goes and talks to Ed. And we don't hear the conversation, but it ends with Tom punching Ed in the face when Ed goes to shake his hand. So it was very strange. We don't really know what the exact conversation was. But so later that evening, Lynette goes into Ed's office and confronts him and starts popping off about his marriage. And Ed's like, no. Don't come after me here. And he hands her like everything that the accountant found, which was Tom taking a bunch of unauthorized trips to Atlantic City. And the like most damning part of that was he bought flowers and 2 tickets to a show one of the days that he visited. So later that night, Lynette meets with Tom in the lobby after he's leaving, and she kind of tries to goad him into like talking to her about whatever's going on, but he plays dumb. And we kind of talked about this last episode, but his approach makes no sense because like after Tom hit Ed, obviously Ed was going to show Lynette the stuff. So it's like, does Tom really just think that Lynette is completely in the dark still?
I think whether he hit him or not, like, Lynette was going to find out.
Yeah.
And I think that's actually sick of it. Like, that's cool. That's cool that he did that because I think Lynette deserves to know that her husband is being ungrateful. I mean, okay, Lynette did get him fired from a job at one point. That was truly fucked up and heinous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But she did get him this job. Also, she didn't really believe in him getting this job. I don't know. Lynette hasn't been the perfect wife, but I feel like...
Oh, sorry.
She hasn't been the perfect wife, but I also feel like it doesn't warrant... I mean, nothing warrants somebody cheating on you.
No.
And I think it's still great that Ed told her. She deserves to know.
I also think, like, it came out... Okay, so Lynette actually, like, was pretty... basically, like, when it came out that she screwed up Tom's promotion, I will say that Lynette did do a lot of things to appease Tom, and mm-hmm. that's not to say that it excuses what she did, but I do think she was at least, like, trying to, like, be apologetic and find ways that she could make it up to him. And, like, he was the one that was like, you go to work and I stay home. That's what I want. She did it. Then when he wanted to go back to work, she supported that. And she didn't want him to work with her simply because it would be weird for her to be his boss, which it ended up being. Tom ended up having a problem with it within an episode. So, like, I don't necessarily think, no, she's not the perfect wife, but I do think, like, she's tried to atone for her actions, if that makes sense.
Yeah, she's done what she can.
Yeah, and so I do feel like if Tom is still having a problem with it, or if he has more things he needs to work through, then that's part of being in a marriage, is he needs to now voice those things and start finding ways to actually solve them.
But you don't go to Atlantic City and cheat on her. No,
you
go to,
like, couples counseling, or you, like, do real things. Like, that's why this is so, like, I don't know, like, it's just disturbing to me that he's even lying to her about anything, because his whole thing was that she lied to him. So it's like, okay, well, then don't turn around and do the exact thing that, like, you were so mad about. And, like, I don't know. I will say, too, until Lynette popped off at Ed, I think Ed was gonna be, like, really sweet to her about this, because when he started the conversation, he was like, I need to show you these things, like, and then she started just yelling at him, and Ed was like, fine, fuck it, here you go, here's your stupid papers. I do think Ed was trying to be, like, nice about it, but it just turned into a disaster.
Well, shout out Ed. And then, I mean, there was a little bit of Applewhite action that Caleb is going to be fed Barbitol by Betty because he tried to rape Danielle. And then while he's out on their last picnic together, his last day on this earth, he lets the secret out that Matt told him to go kiss Danielle and that she was going to protest. And Betty's like, what else did he motherfucking say? Mm-hmm. And then she goes back home and she's like, yeah, I killed Kayla. We got to clean up now. And then we can, like, get out of skedaddle. We can skedaddle. And then she locks Matt in the basement and she's like, that's what you get for being an asshole to your brother. So he's currently in the dungeon. Caleb is alive, and Betty is really running that household. So that's where we were.
Quick note, I read this thing, the Parents Television Council, a Christian conservative responsible entertainment advocacy watchdog, named I Know Things Now, which was this episode, the worst TV show of the week for following its airing and its words for adultery, nudity, and teen sex. So the Parents Council was going hard on this show, like, for because of this episode.
Oh my god, there was no teen sex in any of these episodes, was there?
Yeah, Andrew.
Oh, I thought I was okay. You see him laying in bed shirtless.
It's just funny. It's just funny that, like, I'm, like, reading, like, looking back on this now, you and I really enjoyed this episode, but I'm just kind of, like, reading about the reception, and, like, this episode received, like, mixed reviews from critics and viewers, and I'm like, this was a banging episode. Like, I don't know what more you could want.
From critics and viewers? Oh, yeah. My God.
And, like, the fact that, like, the Christian conservatives got pissed about it, that means you know you're watching good television.
Yeah, someone out there will always have a problem with what you do.
But it's crazy to me that this episode was, like, controversial, I guess, because this was great.
Some of the best television I've seen. Yeah, I'll never stop thinking about it. But, well, we can move on to our desperate deeds now.
Okay.
I can say my desperate deed. I think I recorded this in a different episode and then our recordings got messed up. But it's about me. When I was little, I went strawberry picking with my family. And I ate too many strawberries while we were picking, and then I ate more when we got home, and I was, like, 4 years old, and I didn't have a big belly, and I ate, like, 3 pounds of strawberries for sure. I was, like, a percentage of me was, like, a big percentage of me was all strawberry. And then that night, my family took me to go get, I don't know where my brother was, he wasn't there, but We went to go get Chinese food at our local Chinese place called the Happy Dragon, which is the best name for a Chinese place ever. Mm-hmm. And before we were even ordering, I remember feeling like really sick. And I was like, I think I need to like go in my head. I'm like, I need to like go to the bathroom and like, I'm going to throw up. But I was trying to voice that to my mom because I just think like she would have accompanied me or something. But I was like, I think I need to. And immediately I started like puking all over the table. And my mom used her hands to try and cup the vomit because she thought it was just going to be like a baby burping up some vomit. And it wasn't like that at all. The strawberry red vomit covered the entire foretop and then onto the floor. And my dad was just like, I think we're going to need the check, please, to the waiter. And there's vomit everywhere on me, on my mom, on the table. And I just like to think about how desperate my parents were to get out of the situation and how desperate my mom was to, like, make this vomit situation not happen, that she would put her hands in front of my mouth as I was vomiting. I don't know what life, what happens to you after you have a baby, but... that was the wrong choice that day.
I don't think I ever want someone to vomit in my hands, so.
No, baby or not. That
sounds awful, yeah. No thanks.
Yes, parents do desperate things when they have kids.
Have I told the story or am I this desperate, embarrassing story of the time I lost my phone at Disneyland?
No.
Okay.
Because I don't remember that.
All right, folks. So this one's a bit of a... this is more just an embarrassing story than necessarily a desperate deed. But I was at Disneyland. It was like the year I graduated high school. And I had gone with my boyfriend at the time. And... oh, God. So we were at the park.
I'm so excited.
We were at the park. And we're in like the Fantasyland area. And... I go to the bathroom and I realize like I've started my period and I was wearing like light shorts, and this is like TMI for our listeners, but I've never had regular periods. So it just came out of nowhere. Like I had no warning, just on my period. So I bled through my shorts. So I'm sitting in this bathroom and I'm texting my boyfriend, like, we're going to have to like go buy like a dress or shorts or something like from Downtown Disney. Cause I'm obviously not buying like a full outfit from the fucking Disney park.
That was desperate on its own. Buying a Disney outfit.
Oh my God. It was so sad. So
you could have bought like an oversized shirt, now that I'm thinking about it. Those are very in now.
Yeah, but I don't know if they were super in at the time.
They were not, but...
and this was, like, the best, like, it was a great time at Disney, too, because, like, it wasn't super busy at the park, so I was, like, living my best life, so this was, like, a huge downer. But I leave the bathroom, and I come outside, and I get over to where he is, and I realize I left my phone in the bathroom. So I go running back in there, and it's already gone. It had literally been, like, 2 seconds. I was like, what the fuck? I had my ringer on, so we tried calling it, nothing. So the reason why this was, like, extra terrible was... we had to drive far that night, and he had a fucking flip phone. So, like, my iPhone was, like, our map. Like, we had no idea how to go anywhere. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, fuck. Mind you, I'm still wearing, like, the clothes I'd, like, bled through at this point. So I'm,
you never
like,
got
double...
new clothes?
No, not yet, because I came out and realized I'd lost my phone.
Oh, shit.
So I'm, like, literally, like, this is probably, like, one of the lowest moments of my life. Like, I've lost my phone. I'm bleeding through. My boyfriend's phone is about to die. So we had to walk over to Downtown Disney. He had to buy a new cord. We had to sit there while he charged it. I had to call my parents so my parents could, like, do the phone insurance thing and, like, help us get a new one. Then we went to some it's all overpriced shit at Downtown Disney. So I found an outfit. Luckily, like, obviously I had money for it. It was, like, it wasn't even me. It was, like, this, like, dress. It was just not. I felt just so uncomfortable. Then we go to, like, the downtown or the, like, Main Street Disney people. They're like, yeah, we'll let you know if we find your phone. Unfortunately, we haven't. They had to print out, like, a map for us, like, print out directions for how to get back to the high desert, like Hesperia, like out by, like, you know, middle of nowhere. An hour plus drive. And yeah, so I never found my phone. We ended up having to stay at my aunt and uncle's house for a while so we could wait for a new phone to be shipped to me so we could get anywhere. And, yeah, that was, like, the most, like, the feeling of desperation I felt standing in Fantasyland with shorts bled through and I had no phone was just, like, the worst experience. But I will say this. I was able to get us to where we needed to go using a printed out map with directions. And I didn't think I had that skill, but I did. So that's good to know in a crisis. But I've never been so angry with someone for having a flip phone in my entire life. I was like, fuck you. Why can't you have a fucking real phone? Like, what are we doing?
Because he doesn't want the government to track him.
Okay? I guess not. Like, I guess. But I was like, Jesus.
He has like a burner phone.
Yes, it was like a fucking burner phone. I don't even think it was a flip phone. It was just like a little brick that had like 9 keys and a tiny screen.
I
didn't even
it.
Think they made those, but they did in 2014.
You could, like, play Snake on it.
God, I was so furious. But yeah, that was like one of the worst, like, most uncomfortable moments of my life, I think. Definitely. That was not how I wanted my day at Disneyland to go.
I feel like you're, like, every woman's at peak desperation when you start bleeding through.
Nothing
your
worse.
Shorts. Yeah.
I didn't even realize I had started my period until I went to the bathroom. Like, that's how, like, I had no idea. Like,
yeah. Just it's usually like that. It's a surprise every time. You're like, oh, hey.
I don't even think I'd had a period of, like, 3 months at that point, too. So I was just, like, going about my business. I'm like, what the fuck?
And then your body is just like, what's up? Well, we hope you're warmed up and ready to dive into season 2, episode 22, No One Is Alone. We're going to go ahead and watch. You can watch on Hulu or Amazon Prime. And we'll be right back. But in the meantime, buckle up.
Buckle up. Susan tries to get Edie to confess to burning down her house. Bree dedicates all her energy towards Danielle after giving up on Andrew. Lynette follows Tom to discover the truth. Gabby and Carlos butt heads over the treatment of their surrogate, Zhao Mei. Felicia's ultimate plan for Paul is finally revealed.
Yeah, so the only thing I cared about during this episode was, is Tom cheating on Lynette? I obviously the other storylines were great, but all my mind as I was watching these other women, I'm like, but Lynette.
Lynette's was the most important. Even I will say this, it felt very, very random that we had the Paul Young story that we did after not seeing him for like 5 episodes. I just wish like maybe we'd had one more episode of buildup right before this, just so this didn't feel so out of nowhere. Like, that's something that I think this show has a problem with, is like with the Applewhites and now like Zach and Paul. They're like, we won't hear from them for like 5 episodes, and then all of a sudden they come and swing in, and I'm like, I don't care anymore though. I haven't seen them. Like, I'm not invested.
I know, like we said, Mike and Zach are related. Yeah. Like, we forgot because it's been so long. That was hot and heavy until episode 13 or 14. Mm-hmm. I, for real, don't care about Felicia Tillman anymore.
No.
I don't care about Felicia Tillman.
No, this
I'm
was so
uninterested
random.
In her. I think that she's boring. Just get over the fact that Martha died. You didn't even like her. She was a bitch.
That's the other thing. Why not just make her like her sister? Because that would make her motivation actually make sense.
Yeah, it's just like they didn't like each other and she's boring. And so, yeah, came out of nowhere. Agree. And other than that, I liked that Susan found some independence. Mm-hmm. Carlos still fucking sucks, but I have some opinions that I'll go over once we get into it. Have some opinions. And I don't know. It was not as good as the last 2 episodes, but they can't all be winners.
No, they can't all be bangers. Okay, sorry. I'm laughing because we're sitting here talking, and out of nowhere, all the animals just jumped on the bed. I'm like, I didn't even know they were all in here. So
they can sense our desperate housewives energy.
Be quiet, buddy.
Aww. My cat is ignoring me. It's hot out, and she's mad for some reason. Just thought it's hot. I don't control the weather, Salem. I don't know what to say.
She's like, why not, though? Can't you?
But, yes. I mean, when Lynette left, she took the dog. And I think that's pretty bold.
This dog that we have never really
seen. I haven't seen the dog. What kind of breed is it? Yeah, we're animal people. But we'll get started. We start off with Mary Alice Young, per usual, taking us through what Susan's going through post-fire, post-arson incident. Mm-hmm. And Susan had always believed the good thing about hard times is you get to find out who your friends really are. And Bree had brought her cookies when her grandma died. At first, I thought she said mom. And I was like, I'm like, Sophie's alive and well, but no, grandma. Gabby brought a guy over when her third book sucked. So here we are. We know that Susan sucks at writing or arting, artistry, whatever.
She sucks at whatever fake job she has.
Okay. Yeah, maybe it was just a bust of a book. But and then when her divorce was final, it was Lynette who poured the scotch, and that was cute. And her life was shattered once again, but her friends came to help pick up the pieces. And they're all there, like, I don't know what you do at the site of arson. I guess they were trying to collect her items that didn't burn. But they're all talking. They're like, you should stay with Bree. She says that she'll get a motel. And then Bree's like, no, I'll clear up Andrew's room and then you can come over. So I guess we all know that Andrew's gone now. Like, the neighborhood knows. I'm not really sure, but they brush over
time.
That.
Yeah, like, this is where I'm like, there's no timeline. They never give us any time for anything.
I'll tell you when it comes up, but this is I'll tell you my theory when it comes up. It'll come up. And then Orson is there. That was the biggest question for me. Orson's like, I got this, Susan. And Mike gives him a dirty look. And then this dude rolls up. And this guy is a very famous actor. He's in the movie Memento. I apologize. I don't know his name, but he plays the insurance agent here.
Oh, Stephen Jablonski, something weird like that.
Yeah, famous. I've seen him in so many things.
Stephen Tobolowsky.
Yeah, he's one of those, like, that's my level of fame that I want to be. Just like everybody just knows, like,
character
you.
Actor, yeah.
They don't really fucking know your name. That's okay.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
He's from Town and Country Insurance, and his name's Bud Penrod. And he's like, oh, and this, like, look at that. No fun at all. And she's like, yeah. When am I going to get the check to rebuild? And he's like, it's going to be a while. The fire department ruled that this is an arson and can't give you money until we finish the investigation. And she's like, who would want to burn my house down? And I'm like, shut the fuck up.
Everybody loves me. And I'm like, yeah. This is big cheerleader energy here. And I really don't like it.
It was. He's like, do you have enemies? She's like, no, look, the whole neighborhood is here. Everyone likes me. And then she's just Edie across the street. I wish that Edie was smoking a cigarette, but I don't think they can show people smoking, but essentially she was smoking a cigarette watching Susan clean up her art, like her work. And yes, hard times is what Susan used to distinguish who was a friend and who wasn't. Dun dun dun. We get to the intro. And next thing we know, Mary Alice Young is taking us through the theme of the episode. Not everyone enjoys being a small part of a large community. Some yearn to leave it, so they strike out on their own, hoping their solitude will bring a little peace and quiet. And it is only then they discover how dangerous it is to be alone in the world. And Felicia, we get this zoom in on Felicia. She's being bothered by a bee. So we see there's a beehive in this neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Note that it's going to come back later. And she sees Zach taking out the trash and is so audacious, uses this opportunity to break into their house while he's out taking out the trash for like 5 minutes. So she's checking drawers and cupboards, and she finds a key ring in the cupboard. And I'm like, why is everybody keeping their keys like this? You don't keep your keys like that, organized, labeled, what they go to. This is asking for trouble. And Paul catches her and is like, I'm calling the police. And she's like, I was here shouting at the back door. I just needed flour. I'm a little psychic and I predict fresh baked cookies in your future. And I was like, ugh, vomit at that line. Zach comes in. He's like, what does she want? And I wanted to call him Peter. Peter's gone. Peter's gone for good. But Paul is like, she was in the cupboards. Get the trash bag. We're throwing everything away. And all I know is we're eating out tonight. So they panic.
Yeah.
I guess we can just knock Paul out right now.
Yeah, we'll start with the bang.
Yeah.
Do you want to dive into this one?
Let me see. It's pretty short. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what's good with it. We get a moment somewhere that, like, Felicia is basically, like, drawing her own blood. Mm-hmm. And she calls the police and she says, Paul Young is threatening me. And she's like, they're like, is he here? Is he there now? And she's like, no. And they're like, well, until he does something, we can't do anything. And she's like, I won't live in fear. I'm going to confront him if you guys won't do it. And then we see that she's been saving up her blood. Like, she's drawing her blood and then putting them in packets and putting them in the fridge. So next thing we know is that Paul wakes up in the middle of the night and he slips on something. I don't know how he didn't hear this bitch leaving blood all over his house, like, and cutting, like, leaving. I don't know when this happened, but he must have been knocked the fuck out, slips on something, and it's tons of blood leading to the door to the garage, and he's like, psychotic bitch. and he's leaving bloody fingerprints everywhere. Like, he opens his garage door and just leaves, like, a bloody handprint. Mm-hmm. Felicia, I said in my thoughts, I was like, Felicia acts like this bitch has not murdered before and hasn't cleaned up a crime scene. Like, he's done this several times in his life now. The blood leads to his car, his little SUV, and before he knows it, the cops show up. So that did throw me for a loop. I'm like, oh shit, the cops are there before Paul can clean this up. I'm worried for him. I'm on Paul's team at this point.
Yeah, no. Quick note, her whole motivation is Martha Huber, and her sister was literally, like, extorting them because they, like, I mean, she didn't know necessarily about the murder, but she knew about the baby, and to be fair, they did take the baby from a pretty ratchet-ass situation, so, like, her sister was not, like, this good person who just got murdered for no reason.
Yeah.
She drove a woman to suicide.
So, we're Team Paul, if anyone asks, but the cops show up, like, he says there was never a confrontation because that's why they're there. They heard there was a confrontation between him and Felicia. And he said she made that call. Like, go check on her. She's probably laughing and drinking a martini or whatever. And then I was like, why didn't they check where the blood led first? Because there's blood literally everywhere. And these cops are like, was there a confrontation? And then they look in the trunk and there's two fingers. So I'm like, damn, this bitch cut off her own fingers.
Yeah.
And then at the end, we get a scene with Felicia at a cabin in the middle of nowhere. And she's like renting it from a guy. And he's like, you'll really be off the grid. And she's like, I need that. And then she grabs the keys from this dude. And we see that she has a bandage. She cut off her own fingers. So confirmed.
Mm-hmm.
So Paul was getting arrested last time we saw. Bummer.
I have to say, for all of our Harry Potter fans out there, this episode came out around the time the third movie came out. And in the third movie, there's a scene, like, there's a whole plot line where a character cut his finger off and faked his death.
Yes. So,
like, Peter Pettigrew. So I'm like,
did they steal that from Harry Potter?
I just have to say, though, it is kind of wild that they came out around the same time. So I'm like, interesting. But yeah, this seems to be the way to frame people for murder. The easiest way to do it is just cut off a little appendage you don't necessarily need.
I guess so. So now we know. And I'll let you take us through the Susan Edie interactions this episode. Usually we love this power couple, and I think I do at the end of this storyline as well. I think we had some positive outcomes.
Yeah. So unintentional, though. I don't think Edie was trying to pep talk Susan, but that's just kind of how it went down. But so after the whole insurance agent situation, Susan goes across the street and talks to Edie. So she basically point blank asks her, like, hey, did you, like, burn my house down? Like, what's the deal here? She's, like, trying to be all awkward. She's like, I don't know. Maybe did you do this? And Edie just, like, point blank says, like, yeah, I burned your house down. Like, I was very mad at you. And she, like, just, like, basically admits to everything, and Susan's like, oh, well, I'm gonna go fucking tell the police, like, what the fuck? And Edie's like, but you have no witnesses. No one heard me say that. You have no, like, true idea. Like,
she's
no,
like, I didn't confess. Yeah. Nobody heard that.
Yeah, she's like, what are you even talking about? So, while this is happening, Susan and Mike, I guess, are, like, I don't even really know what they're doing because it's very...
I said there was tension. Yeah. That's what the word I use, all caps. I said tension when he puts the little wire on her.
Yeah, no. So basically, okay, sorry. So basically Susan goes over to Mike's house and she's like, she tells him like what happened and
she's like, how do you do this wire shit?
Or yeah, she's like, how do I put on a wire? She's like, you have experience with that, right? Like, harking back to his days as basically before, a private investigator.
Yeah, before he was a plumber full time.
Yeah, before he was a fucking plumber. I have to know, I have to wonder, when he became a plumber for his, like, for his cover, was he just a plumber before that? And then, like, Noah was like, can you also be a private investigator? And
I know, that's what I'm saying. I'm like
I
what
knew
was,
my history.
He has to have some sort of, like, you have to have, it's a skilled labor. Like, you have to know how to do it. You know, just, like, go plumb.
I feel like maybe he really was one because he was an ex-con, and that seems like one of the few places, like, job opportunities.
Yeah. You could, like, have.
So Mike does help her, and then he's like, oh, and if you need a... So in the meantime, she's staying with Bree, and Bree's, like, starting to crack, which we'll get to that later when we talk about Bree. But in the meantime, Mike's like, hey, if you need somewhere to stay, like, you could always stay at my house. And Susan's like, oh, are you asking me to move in with you? And I'm like... I don't think he said that. I think he said that he could stay at my house. Like, what the fuck?
I need to call out, like, her ugly-ass, trashy-ass belly ring.
I didn't even notice that.
She had a belly button ring, and I was like...
I don't know how I feel about my mom having a belly button ring.
No, I had a belly button ring for a long time. I took it out. I just one day, I was like, I can't do it. And my boyfriend makes fun of me because I'm like, he's like, I bet you had a ratchet one, like one of the dangly ones. I was like, no.
I really wanted a belly button ring when I was younger. My parents said no, and I'm kind of grateful. I'm like, thank you for saving me from that, at least.
But yeah, my mom having one, don't like it. Had to call it out, though. But.
No, this is like Susan trying to be hip and young and cute. And I really hate it. And you know that, like, a costume designer made that choice. Like, who decided this? Like, nothing's ever an accident on, like, a TV show like that. There were some really bad outfits in this episode, which we'll get to. But so Susan considers this, but she decides that she's not going to move in because I'd be weird. And so she's like, whatever. And she also, like, Edie called her weak at one point, and so, like, that's, like, in Susan's head, like, throughout this. But so she shows up to Edie's and, like, tries to get her to, like, talk, and Edie does, like, basically admit it, but then, like, Susan's being, like, as obvious as possible that she's trying to get her to...
Well, you couldn't, like, hear Edie all the way because she was eating popcorn, so it wasn't, like, the clearest...
Yeah, she's like yeah, I burned up my house down. Like, she's, like, talking, like, through eating, and it's, like, the craziest fucking shit. And so Susan's, like, trying to get her to say it more clearly, and Edie, like, realizes pretty quick, because Edie's on a fucking moron, that Susan has tried to get a confession out of her. So she, like, rips her... Does she, like, rip her shirt open?
Yeah, she rips... Yeah. Okay, this was one of the most tragic... like shirt, like outfits of the episode. The shirt Susan is wearing while doing this is horrid.
Okay, also Edie's entire outfit.
Everything was bad.
It was so
bad. She rips Susan's shirt open, so we see the belly button ring yet again, along with Susan's like rock hard abs.
I don't know. I do think there's like in her contract that a few times a season she has to like be in a bra so we can see her body because something they're very
like
adamant.
They like needed to inspire more anorexia at the time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wasn't
for sure.
Enough.
So then, like, Susan runs and Edie chases her, and Edie is wearing like low rise white cargo pant type things with like a corset top.
A corset.
It's very strange and just awful, but she somehow pulls it off because she's hot, but whatever. So she chases Susan into this like weird park thing that's like by their like in their house or in their neighborhood, and we get the bees come back, and Susan kind of like Edie thinks she gets the recorder, and then they have a throwdown, and then the bees attack them, and Edie ends up in the fucking hospital because she gets almost stung to death, essentially, because Susan just always brings chaos to Edie's poor life at this point. So Susan ends up visiting Edie at the hospital. And at the hospital, Susan's like, hey, I have this, like, idea for us. Like, how about you just confess that you saw somebody, like, around my house with kerosene, and that way no one gets in trouble and I get my money. And Edie's like, fuck you, I'm not helping you. Like, I'm going to get revenge on you. And while all this is happening, like, before that, Edie makes a point to say, like, you stole Mike from me, which that's debatable. You slept with my fiance and you burned my house down. Like, I'm fucking, like, no, I'm so over you. Which two of those things are accurate, so I will give that to Edie. But While they're in the hospital, Edie, like, calls her, basically says, like, everyone's just gonna come help you because you're, like, you always are, like, the victim. And then Susan's like, well, people like me. She's like, people don't like you. Like, they just feel bad for you, like, because you're weak and sad and, like, pathetic. And I'm like, low-key, she's calling her out.
This is not wrong. Yeah.
And so Susan decides that she's going to stand on her own two feet, or attempt to, in this whole situation. So Edie, being what she thought was bitchy, ends up kind of inspiring Susan to be a better person, I guess.
Or yeah, because then Mike like invites her to move in, like, yet again. And she's like, I don't want to be the town charity case. And, like, I think I got this. And I'd love for you to come over for coffee, like, once my house is rebuilt. So how about, like, a year or 6 months later.
Yeah, so Susan's like, means. I'm gonna try and be my own person. And I'm like, it's cool.
I'm happy for her.
Yeah, no, like, I think that's a good character, like, choice for her, because I think that both of us at various points throughout the past two seasons have kind of called out Susan's dependent behavior. Yeah,
she's a little bit codependent. But I also have to say something I've been thinking about. I'm like, I mean, why is she acting like, okay, she didn't, like, she's acting like she didn't burn Edie's house down. And, like, why is she so adamant that Edie confessed anything when Edie could just turn around and be like, actually, Susan burned on my house? Like, because she doesn't have any proof of it at this point. Like, I guess that would be why Edie doesn't have proof.
But, like, that's the thing. Like, Susan refuses, like, in Susan's mind, because it was an accident when she burned Edie's house down. Like, this is a completely different situation. But in reality, like, Susan broke into her house and fucking burned her house down. Like, it wasn't really an accident because she was still doing something super weird and creepy to begin with.
Yeah.
So, like, Susan just, like, this is why I get frustrated with her, because it's, like, she's so fucking hypocritical. Like, what if Edie... Okay, so when Edie's house burned down, like, for some reason they didn't call that an arson. Oh, because the candles. They didn't call that one an arson. But, like, what if they had? Like, do you think Susan would have fucking confessed? No.
No.
So, like, she, I think
been
that...
like, oh, my... There would have been, like, three episodes of her debating what to do.
Yeah, and so I feel like Edie could just throw that in her face. Like, well, you wouldn't have done that for me. So, like, why should I do this for you? Like, yeah. You fucked my life over multiple times. I'm done.
I'm team Edie.
I am, this, too.
But, and I'm glad that she talked some sense into Susan. So, there we are. But there was some crossover with Bree, so I'll go over what was going on with Bree, and we see her really reach the end of her rope here. And I've been there. There's definitely times I'm like, maybe I should just check myself in somewhere to, like, relax. I mean, I know these places are not, like, spas, that you don't go there to relax, but you do go there to, like, help yourself. And I've definitely had times where
I've contemplated it. And this show is, like, my example. I'm like, maybe I should do what Brie did.
For fucking sure, I've contemplated it. I've been there. So I feel super horrible for her. But at first, it starts out on a positive note. She's really jazzed to have Susan and Julie over. And she's, like, telling Danielle about how great it's going to be. She's like, it's going to be like living in a sorority. We're going to stay up all night and gossip and make s'mores. And I'm, like, getting a little far ahead, but I appreciate the energy. And Danielle just calls it like she sees it. She says, why are you pretending to be happy? And I heard you crying and pacing and, like, all night. And she's like, I don't want to talk about that. And she's like, I know you're worried about Andrew, but he can take care of himself. And if he couldn't, he shouldn't have run away. So I guess that Bree is telling people that Andrew ran away. That's what she's saying. That wasn't clear in the opening scene, but I guess everybody knows that he's not there and he's run away. And Danielle says, Bree says, you're all I have left now, and I will be the best mom that I can be. And Danielle says there's room for improvement, and Bree is stung. And you see this all over her face. Danielle says, it's just that you forgot my birthday. And Bree is like, what?
To be fair, the hell? We go, like, 20 episodes at a time, not really not seeing Danielle, though. So it's like, to be fair, I'm like, I mean, she's probably not wrong that Bree neglects her, but, you know.
Yeah. So Bree can't believe that she forgot this. And Danielle says it was 6 weeks ago. So my theory is that Andrew got kicked out maybe 4 weeks ago. I was going to say 6 weeks ago, but then Danielle says you were, like, really in your alcoholic phase.
And she brings up, like, the trial or whatever.
Yeah, so I'm guessing that Andrew's really been gone, like, 2 to 4 weeks at this point. That's my best estimate based on her forgetting the birthday. But Danielle's like, or Bree says, let me make it up to you. I'll throw you this huge party. And Danielle's like, that could be cool, but I'd really actually just like to have Andrew's room. I need the closet space. And Bree doesn't like this idea, though. It's that thing that parents do. They hold on to too much of your shit because they, I don't know, they're attached. And Bree's like, I don't think know about that. She says, you said he's not coming back. You forgot my birthday. You're not in a place to negotiate. She's like, where am I going to put all those things? He might come back. And Danielle is certain that he will. I'm all you have left. So then next thing we know, Bree is off her rocker and she's going above and beyond. She tries to surprise Danielle with a big balloon 17. It's like a 17 made out of balloons. And she's like, what the fuck is this? And she's like, isn't it, darling? I made it for your party. It's like, and she's like, were you up all night making this? And she doesn't answer. She's like, let me show you something else. You're going to love it. And she gives her the invitation to her own part, like to Danielle's party. It's going to have a fajita bar and a juggler, and Bree says it's going to be hip juggler. He only performs to Beatles songs, so I don't know why that would make him hip. It's not 1960. Danielle is not pleased. She doesn't want any of this, and it's not even her birthday anymore. That was 6 weeks ago. Missed it. And she says, I just want you to have the best party of your life. And Danielle's like, I just want a few friends over to hang out. And Bree's like, okay, I can make the cake. And she's, Danielle's just like, you need to get rid of the balloons. Like, my friends are going to roast me. She says, okay. And so Bree just starts popping balloons like a lunatic. And Danielle is like, are you sure that's necessary? Like, that's, you don't have to do it this way. And she's like, well, I can't put it in the garbage this way. And Danielle just can't handle it. And she goes upstairs. She runs into Susan and she's like, just another morning at the Vandekamps. And Bree is still popping balloons, doesn't care. Susan's like, oh, what's up? And Bree's like, did I wake you, while she's mid balloon pop? And she's like, sorry, Danielle doesn't want these and I'm pressed for time. And Susan's like, are you okay, Bree? And she says she's fine, but she's peak crazy.
Yeah. Really quick. What was the episode where Matthew was buying Daniel a birthday present? Because that's our timeline.
Oh, that was a while ago.
Yeah.
Quite a while.
So they really are fitting a lot of shit into 6 weeks.
A lot happens.
Because I just realized, I'm like, we do kind of have a timeline because there's like a whole thing where Matthew like tries to get money to buy her a present. Forgot.
Yeah.
I just remembered that. Yeah. So I don't.
We're going to have to look back. Yeah. So yeah. Then Danielle's having her party. Julie is there. She sees Bree and she's like, Bree, are you okay? And they're in the kitchen. She's like, yeah, why? And she's like, well, people are asking about the cake and you've been icing it for a fucking hour and we just want the cake. And she's like, I keep messing it up. I don't know what's wrong with me. And she's like, you're probably just tired. We heard you up all night again. And she's like, this icing is too thick. And she's literally like wiping it off with her hands. And it's kind of gross. She's like re-icing this one part of it. And she's like, I mean, Julie's like, people aren't going to care if the icing's perfect. And Bree says, some people remember details. And someday I want Danielle to remember how perfect her cake looked and how hard her mother worked to make her happy. This cake is a symbol of my love. And Julie is like, okay, I thought my mom was crazy. And then they go back to the party. Later, the cake is ready. They sing happy birthday and they are almost done. And Bree is like, stop. And one of the candles went out and she's like, we have to do this all over again. And Danielle's like, fucking stop. She's like, no, this is your special day. I need to make it perfect. And she's like, just give me 2 seconds. And these other people are like, is your mom serious right now? And Danielle's like, welcome to my own private hell. And then some girl comes over and just takes a like finger of frosting and she's like, wow, that's bomb. And then Bree sees it when she comes back and literally like stares down everyone and it's very scary. And she's like, who touched this? And they're all like, why does it matter? And she's like, someone ruined the cake. Who was it? You? And Danielle's like, fucking, this is so embarrassing. And then she calls out a fat chick. Sorry, yeah, maybe bad. I should say an overweight person, but like I don't like it's true. They cast this girl just for this. And yeah. She's like, looks like you enjoy the frosting. And then the girl who did it is like, no, it was me. And she keeps coming for the fat girl. And I guess the girl who did it is named Barbie. And then Barbie ends up knocking over the cake and Brie is fucking losing it. She said, what's wrong with you? Now it's ruined. Everything is ruined. And Brie is being so, 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 so crazy. Danielle runs away and Brie is like, you can leave the cake here. I'll clean it later. And it's like so embarrassing.
Oh my God. No, I had so much secondhand embarrassment for everybody. Yeah.
So then, side note, Danielle goes looking for Matt and breaks into their house when he doesn't answer. So more breaking and entering, two breaking and entering this episode. Matt hears someone on the stairs and is like, mom, is that you? Cause he's still in this basement and it's Danielle. And he's like, what are you doing here? My mom, and he explains the sitch. Mom flipped out when she found out what we did to Caleb. And Danielle's like, I'll take care of her. And Matt is scared. He's like, she's never been like this before. And Danielle's like, I got this. My mom is so psycho. And I believe.
She's like, I know how to handle psycho. Yeah,
and I believe her. Next thing we know, Brie is cleaning up the cake. Susan comes home and she's like, cleaning up? And it's very clear that she is. She's like, yeah, I know it's late. And Susan's like, go to bed. And Julie and I can help in the morning. And Brie's like, I can't even sleep anyway. And Susan's like, are you okay? And Brie's like, oh, so you heard. And Susan's like, well, when you lose it in front of the pep squad, word spreads. And Brie says, I was fine. And then I was outside my body watching myself become a maniac. And I'm concerned for her. And Susan's like,
I felt sad for her. I know.
I was like, those out-of-body experiences really get you. And she says, do you think you should see someone? And Brie says, I'm just tired. I need a long rest. That'll be good as new. And she's like, I just can't sleep yet. And she says, why? Susan's asking, why not? And she says, when I sleep, I dream. And when I dream, I see Andrew's face in the rearview mirror. And Susan's like, what?
Yeah, she's like, what do you
mean?
And
so she admits that he didn't run away. I dropped him off in the middle of nowhere. I just need time to forget about what I've done and then I could sleep again. And then Susan's like, you know, I'm not tired. So why don't I stay up and help you? And she puts on the cleaning gloves and I'm not that moved by it.
I was kind of like, wow, Susan being a friend, like doing the bare minimum for once in her life. I know, I'm just like,
all right, whatever. So after, yeah, Susan helps. I mean, she did the bare minimum. I'm not going to give Susan a gold star for being a friend because she helped clean up some cake after her friend is having a literal mental breakdown. I wanted her to be more like, tell me more, Brie, like, I'm here for you, or, like, do something, like, extra, but she's just like, I'll help you clean this, I guess, because I don't want to talk about your mental state. That's the vibe I got, so.
Yeah, she's like, I'm not going to ask any more questions or, like, be there for you.
So, not really the best friend. Not a Gabby Brie moment, or by any means, but next thing we know, Danielle leaves Brie a note, and I said, personally, I'm so glad that Danielle will be gone. So she said, Matthew and I are running away together and never coming back. So even her note is juvenile. She says, if you want me to be happy, you won't try and find us. Living with you is like prison. You did this. And then I know, I'm just like, you really had to like stick the knife in and turn it. But last thing we see is Brie checking into psychiatric observation, and the lady there asks what the problem is, and she says, I'm about to have a nervous breakdown, and if you need help, get help. That's all I can say. No judgment. I'm super glad that Brie is getting help, because after the shit she's gone through in the past year, I would have gone way sooner.
Yeah, this was like a long time coming. So side note, if you need help, get help. Don't wait until you have a nervous breakdown.
I know that's normal in our country, but
yeah, no, try to avoid it. Save yourself a lot of stress and just get some help. See a therapist, yeah. Man. Okay, so I'm going to save Lynette for you because I know that this was a huge storyline. So I'm going to jump into Gabby. And Gabby and Carlos kind of had a weird storyline, I would say.
It's like a follow-up, a close follow-up, and thematically to last week.
Yes. So basically, like, one morning, Carlos and Gabby are having breakfast, and their surrogate is still serving them. I find this arrangement very strange that, like, Jaume is still, like, serving them.
Yeah, I think it's weird.
I don't know. I just feel like she should probably just not, like, now the relationship's taken a turn, so they should hire, like, a different maid or something. I don't know. Found that very strange, but she's serving them, and she all of a sudden, like, starts feeling really sick from Gabby's perfume, and she's basically like, you smell bad. And I'm like, oh shit. And Gabby gets really offended. She's like, it's $100 an ounce. And I'm like, Jesus.
I know. Okay. I was like, so, all right.
Yeah, no, I was like very thrown off by this. But so she's like getting bothered by the smell. And then Carlos is like, hey, like, are your boobs tender? And everyone was like, gasps, because they're like, why are you talking about her boobs, weirdo? But
he was a little bit too in tune with this. I'm like,
I know, I'm like, you know, a little bit much, but whatever. So he's like, oh, like, you're feeling sick. And he's like, Gabby, like, she's pregnant, like, these are all signs of pregnancy. And so they go to the doctor and they confirm that Jaime is pregnant. And the next day, Carlos, well, just, I don't even know if it's the next day, who knows, but basically Carlos starts treating Jaume, like, very delicately, and, like, is very in tune with how she's feeling, and is definitely putting her above, like, Gabby and Gabby's needs, and I get that to an extent. She's pregnant, she's carrying their baby, and they kind of coerced her into doing it, so it wasn't, like, really her choice. I don't know, she was about to get deported, yeah. So whatever.
They're really doing her a favor, but, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. It's very, in Gabby's mind, they're doing her a favor. So Jaume, like, is in their bed, and Gabby's like, what the fuck? Like, why is Jaume in her bed? Like, what's happening? And Carlos is like, well, she's sick, and, like, we have a bathroom in here. And Gabby's like, what? Like, why? Like, why does she have to be in here, though? And he's like, well, she needs to be able to get there quickly. And she's just like, well, her, like, the hallway, like, it's not that far of a walk. And I'm like, to be fair, their bathroom's huge. I'm sure it's the same distance walk from the bed to that toilet that it is from their guest room to the toilet, but whatever. And so while that's happening too, Carlos, like, throws out, like, all of her fragrant cosmetic stuff and hair stuff, and Gabby kind of, like, gets pissed off because she's like, I don't understand why, like, I have to get rid of all this. And he's just like, well, this is the priority here. So there's, like, a handful of things that are happening that are, like, basically making Carlos treat Gabby differently. And so he and Gabby, like, share her bedroom, which I have to ask, do they not have a guest room?
They do. That's where Yame has been sleeping. Oh, you mean, like, in addition to Yame's room?
Yeah, because why would so in their house they only have a bedroom with their bed and then
room with a twin bed? Yeah, good question. They must have another room.
I don't know. That seemed very poor of them, and that house seemed pretty big. Yeah, the house is huge. The fact that they don't have a dedicated guest bedroom is strange to me. But they're trying to sleep on this twin bed and it's not working. And Gabby gets super fucking pissed, and so she, like, goes and sleeps on the couch. And Carlos is just not being empathetic whatsoever to Gabby, and when she confronts him about it, he's just like, well, she's the mother of my child, and he lets that slip out. And Gabby's like, okay. So Carlos clearly can't separate what's happening. I don't really understand why he said that or how he would let that slip. And this is just another sign that their marriage is a disaster, and, like, this, this baby is all that holding them together. Yeah, and it's just, like, gross. I don't know. Like, it was just sad kind of watching this happen. But Gabby decides she's not going to do this. And so she gets, like, a sprayer thing that you would put, like, poison in for ants or whatever. And I guess she pours a bunch of different perfumes and, like, leftover just weird smells. And I'm like, okay, how much money do you think she just wasted pouring all these into the sprayer?
I
know.
I was like, I would have never, like, wasted my perfume. You can just spray a little bit, like, but she really wanted it to be crazy.
Yeah, so she, like, douses their bedroom with it, and Jaume immediately, like, screams and gets sick and throws up. So when Carlos finds out what, she did, he gets really pissed off, and, like, he ends up sleeping on the couch. And Jaume, like, just happens to be downstairs and comes down and talks to him and brings him a sandwich. And I'm like, wow, she's really leaning into this male fantasy of, like, what a man could want. And he's like, no, I can't have that. Like, Gabby has me on a diet. And she's like, just try it. It'll taste good. And they kind of eye each other, and they start, like, talking about, like, Gabby and the pregnancy and, like, get all cozy, and it's not good, folks.
I feel like Yao Mei like has a crush on Carlos too, though, and that's also bothering me.
Oh, absolutely. Oh my god, yeah, she's like super into him, and it's gross.
I think Gabby has every right to be uncomfortable. I wouldn't even say she's being jealous. I say that she's uncomfortable. Like, who wouldn't be?
No, this is like gross. Their behavior is like really creepy, and like there's other options than her sleeping in their bed. Like, if that's really the best option, then Carlos should, you know, set up an alternative for him and Gabby that's comfortable. Like, I don't know why he's just completely disregarding Gabby as a person.
Yeah, I would never let. No, if it made my partner uncomfortable, why would we ever be having somebody sleep in our bed? Like,
I know there's other ways that they could about this. It's like Carlos wants to like make Gabby upset
or
uncomfortable.
He's just like that dense and like not observant of people around him or something, unaware. It's just
this was not a good week for the husbands on Wisteria Lane.
The husbands are pissing me off. So
that's kind of my segue.
And Rex probably would be pissing me off too if he wasn't dead. But yes, Tom is packing for Atlantic City next time we see him, and he fucks up big time. As far as we know, I'm praying that this is not what it seems, but the gist of the story is Tom is cheating on Lynette with some chick in Atlantic City.
So now that you've seen the whole episode, looking back on that scene, isn't it pretty fucking disgusting how he gaslights Lynette into feeling like she's crazy for even asking him?
Which scene?
In
Like, and he's so gaslighty, so... Yeah, I'm upset about all of it. But you can tell from the moment that she asks that he's fucking lying to her. So, yeah, Tom's packing and Lynette is there not happy. And I am a Lynette when it comes to issues. I'm not very good. It takes me about, like, 17 minutes to actually say what's on my mind. If somebody's like, what's wrong? I'm like, sorry, I have to, like, ruminate a little bit before I can tell you. Because I'm hoping inside that, like, I'll get over it in those 17 minutes. And then when that doesn't happen, I'm like, I guess I should just say what's on my mind. But that's what Lynette's doing. She's asking him all types of questions, not saying she's upset. But Tom is going on and on. Jerry got a suite. And she's kind of like, what business does he have going to... Oh, no, I said this. I thought it was Lynette. But I said, what business does Tom have going to Atlantic City when he doesn't have a fucking job? That was my first question. Tom's going on and on. The old gang is coming. It's been a while since I've been. Like, how could I turn it down? And Lynette's like, how indeed? And he's getting the gist. What's up? You know, what's going on? Something wrong? And she's like, no. And she's like, I mean, I know you've been there 3 times in the last month without telling me and found these receipts from your expenses. So no, nothing's wrong. And Tom's like, oh, it's so funny. Like, he laughs, legitimate laugh. And she says, it would be better for your well-being if you didn't laugh. And he's like, am I going to have to ruin the surprise? And I'm like, I hope he ruins this. Like, I hope there's something good. He says he's been going there for business and he's up for a top spot at some type of firm at this place called Huffington Promotions. And he's like, if you don't believe me, you can call the CEO himself. And he hands her a business card, or he like puts it somewhere. And she's like, oh, I'm so happy and relieved. And he's like, did you think I was cheating? And I mean, she's like a little.
He makes her feel like she's a piece of shit. Yeah, for even asking.
She's like, I mean, a little bit. And she's like, Ed found the receipts for flowers and like a theater ticket. And he's like, oh, we went to a show. Those were for like the CEO's wife. And he's like, why did you buy flowers? I mean, I don't know if this was what I said or what Lynette was thinking, but I'm like, why would you buy flowers for his wife?
No, she says, why would you buy flowers for his wife? Oh, sorry. Like, she starts apologizing for even asking. And I'm like, no, these are reasonable questions.
Like, I was wondering.
Make you feel
I was like
crazy.
I see that? But like, yeah, she's like, never mind. So great. I love you. And he says, I love you too. And then he takes back the business card and looks guilty as fuck. So... Lynette's suspicious and not feeling good because she sees that he doesn't really leave the business card. And then Lynette's at the airport with Mrs. McCluskey, next thing we know, and she is wing-womaning Lynette on finding out the truth. And I am here for it. I am so obsessed with this. And she's all like gassing her up. She's like, do what you have to do and keep, I'll keep your kids out of trouble. Don't worry. And Lynette's like, am I being crazy following Tom to spy on him? And she's like, if he knew that I was doing this, yada, yada. And Mrs. McCluskey is like, don't fucking worry about it.
It's so sad that Lynette's like sad too. Cause I'm like, no, sis, you're not being crazy. Like you have there's evidence that he's been lying to you. Like you're not making it up. So Mrs.
McCluskey says probably nothing, but you need to know the truth. And Lynette's like, do I was happy. Why don't I just look the other way? Tons of women do it. And Mrs. McCluskey's like, we both know you're not that type of woman. And she's like, what if I see him with another woman? What then? And Mrs. McCluskey's like, I own a gun. So, oh my gosh. Lynette then is in Atlantic City and she sees Tom in front of the hotel that he says he's staying at. He calls her and she's like hiding in this car. And she's like, how's Atlantic City? And he's making up lies about being at the casino, winning money, but he's standing alone in front of the hotel and he's like, Jerry's right here. And Tom's like, how are the kids? And Lynette's like, put Jerry on the phone. And he's like, well, why? And she's like, just been a while since I talked to him. And then a car alarm goes off and like Tom can hear it and she can hear it. Like they're both in the same space. So they both hear it. And he's like, wow, getting weird feedback. And then Lynette makes up an excuse and is like, gotta go. And then Tom gets in his car and drives off and Lynette follows. And I'm surprised her sting wasn't found out right then and there. Then this is
Tom's so stupid. Tom's like watching him in that scene.
But this is the saddest part of the fucking episode. Lynette follows him to someone's house. Like that's where he went. And then she gets out of the car and is snooping and he's drinking a glass of wine. And we see another woman come up and like kind of touch him on his arm and you want to throw up. And then he follows this woman upstairs and you can see Lynette watching them through the window in the best frame shot of the episode. And then she sits in the car for a while. And I said that I'm feeling really sad that she found this out. It sucks.
Yeah, no, it's so depressing. I was like, wow, this hurt. It broke my heart.
Yeah, so.
Because she and Tom have been like, while they have their flaws, they at least have been a team and tend to work through things. And so like, this was like so like, disturbing to see.
Yeah, he's literally fucking, like she doesn't, nobody deserves that. But it makes me extra sad to see Lynette, who's like, works really hard and like, takes care of their children and like, goes out on a limb for Tom all the time, that he's literally just going to Atlantic City and openly going to Atlantic City, not even lying about where he's going. And, like, cheating.
I think, too, like, she was, like, so willing to fight so hard for him at their job. So, I was, like, watching that and then seeing this, I was, like, my heart just broke for her.
And so I'm praying that this isn't true. I'm praying that we're just not seeing the whole picture. But Tom comes home to no one. And then he goes and asks Mrs. McCluskey, like, what the fuck is up? And she's, like, yeah, she packed up the kids and the puppy and left. And he's like, why? Why would she do that? And she's like, she followed you to Lake City and she knows about the other woman and you're lucky that you're not my husband. And Tom doesn't even contest it. That's what bugs me most. He doesn't even say, no, that's not what it was or something. But there we are. So that pretty much wraps up all the women, the Applewhites. There was a little bit more before and a little bit after Danielle runs her little butt over there and runs away with Matt. While he's trapped in the dungeon, he's, like, banging on the door day in and day out, and Betty's just sitting outside ignoring him, and he says he needs water and food, and she's like, yeah, whatever. And then Matt admits to everything. Want me to say I set him up? I did. I thought about the years that we had to take care of him, and if he was gone, we could just have a normal life, but I didn't want him to die. And Betty doesn't give a fuck. Damn you. You're willing to stand by and let me murder him. It's unforgivable. I'm consumed with rage. You better stay in there because you don't want to fucking know what I'm going to do when you get out. And I'm like, Betty.
I did like it. She's so good. Like, that's why I'm sad that her storyline this season wasn't handled better, because she's a great actress and this stuff's good. I'm like, why couldn't the whole season be good? Like,
I do feel like this is enthralling if we'd gotten here faster. And then after, like, Danielle comes by and finds out that Matt is being kept in the dungeon, Betty goes downstairs to give him breakfast. She's like, I'm not cruel. Like, I'm going to open the door and give you the food. Don't charge the door. I'm not in the mood for unpleasantness. And, like, Matthew's being quiet as a mouse, and she opens the door a little bit. And then Daniela does the worst prop work. This actress, not even Daniela, did the worst prop work I've ever seen, with a crowbar, and like knocks Betty's out, but she like barely taps her on the head. She's like poop, and Betty like falls to the ground. And she's like, and Matt's like, I thought you were just gonna steal the key. And they're like, let's go. But Betty's awake and like hears them leave, and it was stupid. So then they run away. So that's where we end up. And Mary Alice Young takes us out. She says it's a shocking moment when we realize we are all alone in this world. The family we take for granted could one day abandon us. The husband we trust so implicitly might betray us. The daughter we love so deeply perhaps won't return to us. Then we could end up all by ourselves. Of course, some see great value in going it alone. For example, then we see Felicia like getting the key to her little cabin.
Mm-hmm. That she booked with her real name.
I know. She's not very smart. So
I'm like,
a boring criminal.
I'm like, why wouldn't they have her say a different name? I'm like, it's not like the audience wouldn't understand what's happening. Like, I found that very strange.
Yes. So all in all, I felt like there were strong things happening.
It was a good episode. Definitely set up for the finale. But I mean, like, what... Makes sense. It's the episode before the finale.
But clearly I have to kill Tom.
Oh, yeah. Tom's dead.
Yeah. Tom's dead to me. So I gotta kill Tom. And I'm gonna marry Mrs. McCluskey, because yet again, she just impresses me with her support and her wit. Mm-hmm. And her just... She has her head on right, like... She's just a stand-up person who wouldn't want to be with somebody who's so great. So mm-hmm. I have to marry Mrs. McCluskey. I guess I'll fuck a Mike.
He's like the just default.
He's my default. I guess I'd fuck Paul because he almost got away. Okay, that's what I'll do. I'll fuck Paul because he almost got away with the... I mean, not got away. He didn't even murder. Paul has moved on from his murderous lifestyle.
That's true.
I mean, he...
If he was a murderer, I feel like he would have murdered Felicia by now.
I was liking that we had Paul, so... No, I can't fuck Paul. I feel like it needs to be Mike. Sorry. Even though it's a default, but... So...
Okay.
That's where I'm at.
Well, my kill is also Tom. I'm going to marry Lynette and treat her right. I've decided. She needs to be treated right, not gaslit out the wazoo. So I'm going to save her. And then I'm going to fuck Orson, because Kyle MacLachlan.
Yeah, he was only there for a second. I thought about that after you started yours. I'm like, she's going to fuck him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I love him. I love Kyle MacLachlan. So, because you're right,
there was no one. So I got to the fuck and I was like, wow, it's slim pickings these days. Slim pickings.
I'm like, I guess Orson was cool for showing up to help. He didn't have to do that. Yeah, that's true. So,
for Housewife of the Week, I think we're going to be aligned that it is Lynette.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like...
She did some quality detective work.
She bought a plane ticket and followed her husband to Atlantic City,
And she wasn't, like, crazy. Like, if I had seen those fucking, like, receipts, I would have gone nuts on Tom to start. Like, I would have been like... explain this now and prove to me that this is not what I think it is. She is like very level-headed, and I think honestly following him and getting evidence was smarter than just like losing her shit.
Absolutely. I think she like went above and beyond. She used her own skills. She kept it together in a way that I wouldn't. She was open with like a woman that she trusted about it. Like she said, yeah, I think my husband's cheating on me. I need your help. And like, I liked seeing the bond between her and Mrs. McCluskey and how it helped her, like, reach the truth. So, Lynette, you get it yet again. Always getting it. And now for our Apple rating. Nervous.
Okay. All right. Okay. Do you have it?
Yeah, I have it.
Okay. Ready.
3, 2, 1. 4.25. Okay.
I wasn't sure if you were gonna go high or low, but it looks like we're right at the same spot. Like it was a good episode. Not necessarily great episode, but it was a good one.
Yeah, the highlights for me are Brie getting the help she needs, going to a psychiatric ward.
Mm-hmm.
But her storyline overall, like her nervous energy, like I get that we had to build up to her going, but
yeah,
I know she's had better, more dramatic freakouts before. And yeah, but it was a highlight for me that she's finally getting help. Another highlight is Lynette's detective work for sure. Highlight of the whole episode. Those are the two things that were really like working for me.
Yeah, I agree. I do think this episode, like, not necessarily a lot happened because they're, like, saving it for the finale.
Yeah.
But this was definitely, like, carrying over what happened. This is, like, the connective tissue, right? Last episode was, like, a lot of shit happened. And then next episode, obviously, it's the season finale, so I'm assuming a lot is going to happen. So this is kind of, like, the bridge between those two.
Yeah.
So it's, like, it was good, but it was definitely, like, mostly set up.
Yeah, and the downsides for me were Felicia Tillman, just I don't care about her anymore. Like, just the major plot hole that we don't care about, like, Mike and Zach anymore that we pointed out in the beginning.
After spending, like, the first half. It's weird yeah. because I do feel like the first half of the season doesn't feel like the same season. Like, I do feel like once George was, like, dead,
yeah,
like, the mid-season truly felt like a whole new... It was almost like that should have been season one's finale or something.
Yeah, we needed a bit more.
Because they carried over a lot of the season one stories at the beginning. And then just, like, we haven't seen John Roland in forever. Like, all that just got... Nothing came from that.
Yeah, he's never coming back.
And then, like, the Susan, Mike, George... Or Susan, Mike, like, Zach stuff, they didn't... They just kind of gave up on that. And then George died, so, like, Bree's storyline, they didn't... So it's like, I don't know. Like, this is where this season, I think, the big complaint is it's choppy for that reason. So, yeah. Like, the stuff at the end does feel rushed because we should have been building more towards this... like, a lot of this earlier.
Yeah.
And especially with, like, the Applewhites, and then... It's like they couldn't decide if they wanted the focus to be the Applewhites or Zach and Paul.
Yeah, it does feel that way. I'd say another, like, a positive is Susan finding her independence, but a negative is, like, the whole storyline between her and Edie is boring to me.
I'm
like,
you're
trying
tired.
To get her recorded. Like it's just so stupid.
No, I'm like, tired of Susan, like... playing the victim. Like, I just, it's so mind-boggling to me that she conveniently forgets that she wasn't gonna do anything for Edie when Edie's house burned down, yet now
yeah,
it's like
she was gonna hide it forever.
Yeah, it's like, woe is me. Like, she literally broke into her house to steal evidence. Like, I don't know, I just feel like Susan is, this is just showing how kind of selfish she is, and I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, so 4.25, it just was missing a lot of synergy, I could say. And so, yeah, not bad by any means. We're heading, but next week, you guys, it's going down.
I'm pretty excited for this finale,
yeah,
I'm not gonna lie.
It's a two-parter, but in the meantime, we'll be dropping that on Monday. But we have our Instagram, our Twitter, our website, our email. So reach out to us any way that you please.
Yeah, we truly loved giving, like, a listener's desperate deed last week.
Oh, my gosh,
so
yes.
More of that, please.
Much better than ours, but we like that you guys like to hear ours, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then if you are enjoying our podcast, go leave us 5 stars wherever you can and follow and tell all your friends. And we just like that. We have our little Desperate Housewives community of super fans.
Yeah.
So we've been enjoying connecting with all of you, and it's always a joy. So... next week, we'll see how this all rounds out. I just need to know. I don't even care about anything else anymore. Is Tom cheating or not?
Yeah.
So next week, we'll have the answer. But you can tune in on Monday. And then in the meantime, you can know your neighbors.
Know your neighbors.